Chapter 22 Marin 5 Marin clanked through the hallways of the Kolinar Palace looking for Orador. He found Renarin instead. The younger son was in Orador's sitting room, seated beside a table, a brush pen held in his hand. "You're writing?" Marin accused, aghast. Renarin looked up with surprise, then relaxed when he saw it was only Marin. He held up his sheet of paper, which was scribbled with very simple glyphs, ones that even Marin recognized.
"They're just numbers," Renarin defended. "Men are allowed to write numbers."
"They are?" Marin asked uncertainly.
"Well," Renarin hedged, "merchants do it, though they usually use tallies. A lot have just started using the glyphs for convenience, though."
"Yes, but why do you need to write them?" Marin asked, regarding the sheet of paper. He knew very little of mathematics, but some of the numbers appeared to be sequences of one sort or another. If there were any connections between the other sets of numbers, however, they were beyond him.
"I just like playing with numbers," Renarin said in his sheepish way, accepting the paper back.
Marin shrugged.
"Where's Orador?"
"He's meeting with someone,"
Renarin said, nodding toward the heir's audience chamber.
"It's a little early to be off to sparring practice."
"We're not going there yet," Marin explained, setting aside his helmet, then reaching over to undo the clasp on his right gauntlet. "Your brother promised to arrange for someone to read to me from the Way of Kings today. I was going to go over to Faith Home to get a reading, but he said he'd arrange for a monk to come here and do it, so he could listen too."
Marin frowned as he spoke, pulling off the other gauntlet, then peering inside.
"What's wrong?"
Renarin asked.
"The gauntlet,"
Marin complained, shaking it up and down for a moment, then peering inside.
"There's a rock or something stuck inside. It's been bothering me all day."
He set the gauntlet aside with a sigh.
"Here, will you help me with the breastplate?"
Renarin rose, helping him pull off the chest piece. Then the younger son picked up Marin's gauntlet, putting it on and letting it size itself to him.
"You're right," Renarin said as Marin took off the rest of the armor. "There is something in here."
Renarin pulled off the gauntlet, picking at the inside. Marin pulled off the last boot, then sat down with a sigh. He was so tired of the awkward metal that he was almost beginning to regret the day he had saved King Elikar's life. Vasher had him training in the plate so often he felt like he wore the suit more often than he didn't. He was surprised the monk hadn't commanded him to sleep in it yet.
"There,"
Renarin said, pulling something out of the gauntlet.
"It was wedged underneath a layer of leather. Look."
He held up something very different from the rock Marin had been expecting. A small pendant tipped with a disc-like piece of carved stone.
"What is it?"
Marin asked, reaching for the stone.
"Looks like jade," Renarin said. "A glyph ward."
As soon as Marin touched the glyph ward, the air in the room drew breath and came to life. Marin stood, frozen for a moment, the source of the strange visions suddenly manifest. Just as before, he could see the air flowing through the room, sense its motions blowing in beneath the door, seeping out through the shuttered window, and even being drawn in and out by Renarin's lungs. Tentatively, he released the glyph ward. The room returned to normal.
"I wonder how it got in there,"
Renarin was saying with a musing voice.
"Must have belonged to the man who tried to kill the king. A glyph ward brought with him, tucked safely in the gauntlet for protection in battle. Didn't work very well, did it?"
Marin touched the glyph ward again, tapping it as it hung from the string below Renarin's fingers. As soon as his fingers brushed the glyph, the air became visible again.
"Marin?" Renarin asked, frowning. "What's wrong?"
"Touch the glyph ward," Marin said. "Try it."
Renarin shrugged, placing the glyph in his hand.
"All right. What now?"
"You don't sense anything different?"
"No,"
Renarin said.
"Should I?
It's just a glyph ward, Marin."
It doesn't work for him, Marin thought. But why?
"What glyph is it?"
Marin regarded the carved character.
I'm not sure, he admitted. Looks like it's a derivative of Na.
Na. Power.
Marin withdrew his hand uncertainly. What kind of strange magic was this? Glyph wards were supposed to protect against the supernatural, not foster it. And why would it work only for Marin?
Do you want it? Renarin asked. Marin paused.
Did he? He reached into his Sencoat's side pocket, pulling out one of his mother's sewn glyph wards, one he had carried with him through battles. It was stained and dirtied, and would look silly next to his fine clothing, but his experiences earlier had taught him to at least carry it with him. He opened it up.
Here, he said, drop it in this.
Renarin frowned, but did as requested. Marin folded the cloth, locking the strange pendant within it, and tucked both in his pocket.
And people say I'm strange, Renarin mumbled, sitting down.
He was cut off as the door to Arador's audience chamber opened, and a man stepped out, followed by Arador. Marin didn't recognize the stranger, though he wore riding clothing, not lavish, but rich enough. Probably a minor nobleman, 19th or 20th lord. The breast of his cloak bore the glyph of House Colin, but the glyph was twisted into an unfamiliar design. Arador stood for a moment, speaking to the newcomer.
Who is he? Marin whispered, leaning closer to Renarin. A very distant cousin, Renarin whispered back. From Crossguard, one of Parshan Jezenrosh's couriers.
Jezenrosh? Marin asked.
Isn't he supposed to be dying or something?
Renarin shook his head.
He left the war because of sickness, but he's since recovered.
Arador gave the stranger a familial clasp on the shoulder, and the courier bowed his head, then turned and walked quickly from the room.
What was that all about? Marin asked as Arador walked over to join them.
Family business, Arador said offhandedly.
He eyed Marin's shard plate sitting in a heap on the floor.
More wall jumping?
Marin shook his head. Basha wants me to learn how to jump up to my feet from a prone position without using my hands.
Wearing shard plate? Arador asked with amusement. That's not possible.
Oh, it is, Marin said. I managed to do it a couple of times.
Out of how many tries? Arador asked skeptically.
500 or so,
Marin admitted. Arador chuckled and Marin blushed.
It's better than last week, Marin said. He had me jumping off the wall, landing on my feet, rolling to the ground, coming up swinging 20 times, then jogging back up the stairs, all without stopping. 5 repetitions nearly killed me.
This time Arador laughed out loud.
Well, he said, if I ever get attacked by a wall, I'll know who to send for. I assume you're here for the king's reading?
Yes.
Good, Arador replied. She should arrive any moment.
Marin paused.
She? You said you were going to bring in a monk.
Oh, did I? Arador said innocently. Completely forgot.
Marin flushed, looking down at his outfit. He was dressed in a padded Shenna undershirt and trousers, meant for use beneath armor. Both were stained with sweat from his day's exertions.
By the winds, he swore, loan me something else to wear.
Arador laughed, nodding toward his bedroom chambers. Marin rushed inside, selecting an outfit as he heard the outer door open and a feminine voice speak. He hurriedly changed. Arador was a tad taller than he, but the clothing fit without looking too bad. He quickly splashed some water on his face from the bin, sprinkled on a bit of scented oil on his neck, then composed himself and rejoined the others. Marin had to admit, this one was rather attractive. Thin-faced, with dark Alice hair, she was a model of noble femininity, reserved without being cold, immaculately dressed and composed. She rose when Marin entered, bowing respectfully. Arador winked his direction, and Marin resisted the urge to roll his eyes.
Marin, Arador announced, let me introduce the Lady Sencal, first daughter of Lord Shannar and Mindevna. We are fortunate for this opportunity. Lady Sencal is known for her poetic voice.
"It is an honor, my lady," Marin said with a nod.
"For I as well," the lady replied. "Please be seated. You wish to hear from the Way of Kings? Which section?"
"The first," Marin requested, seating himself beside Arador on the couch. Lady Sunkhal waved to her companion, a younger girl, probably Sunkhal's ward, who bore a very thick tome. Sunkhal seated herself as well, opening the book in her lap.
"Part 1," she read, "The Ideal Monarch. The sovereign is not a tyrant, but a father. As the Almighty cares for his creations, so the sovereign should love and care for his people. His is a holy position, granted to him by birth from the Almighty. In the eternal eye of the Almighty, a sovereign's worth will be judged not by his acts of heroism, his great conquests, or his wealth. It will be determined by the love he earned from his people."
Despite his annoyance with Arador, Marin smiled. The reading was far better than the ones he had received from the monks. Lady Sunkhal spoke with a melodic cadence, converting Bajardin's simple passages into a rhythmic near ballad. Her voice was sweet and relaxing, and she never stumbled over words like the monks often did.
"She's something, eh?" Arador said quietly, nudging him. "You should trust me more."
Marin raised an eyebrow.
"I haven't forgiven you yet," he informed.
"Oh?" Arador asked.
"What are you going to do? Make me jump off the wall a couple of times?"
"No," Marin replied. "But next time I'm up there, I'll do my best to make certain I fall on you."
Arador chuckled to himself, leaning back and relaxing as he listened. Marin did likewise. Actually, he was rather pleased with the outcome, even if he were getting a little tired of the Way of Kings. He felt guilty admitting it, even to himself, but it was true. He knew the words were important. Kanaran society was founded on Bajardin's philosophies. However, the writing was just so dry. Bajardin outlined his beliefs in a straightforward but dull manner. Marin had been excited the first couple of times he had received a reading, but Dalinar had recommended that Marin hear from the book at least once a week, more often when he could manage it. Even with 6 sections to choose from, the readings were beginning to seem very repetitive.
"The great and magnificent duty of the sovereign is the safety of his people. Without them, he is nothing. As they provide for his sustenance, he must provide for their livelihoods. The second duty of the sovereign is the wealth of his people. He is a waged servant, and if his people do not prosper more because of his presence, then he has failed them."
The book made more sense to him now that he understood that Bajardin's word sovereign didn't just refer to the king, but to anyone of noble blood. The first and fourth sections were the ones Marin found most interesting, the first because it reminded him of the heroes of the past, and the fourth because it mentioned protocol and swordplay. However, even the best sections were a little dry. Marin forced himself to continue listening to readings, however. Dalinar was right. How could he perform his duty if he didn't understand what that duty was? There was no better place to hear about the obligations of his station than through the Way of Kings. The truth was, however, he would much rather have been hearing from one of the great ballads. He had accidentally made the discovery. After a The Way of Kings reading, Marin had heard a monk reading from The Fall of Kanar in a nearby room. He had gone to investigate and had listened ravenously. It wasn't until that moment that he had realized the treasure at his disposal. There were hundreds of great epics to be heard, everything from the betrayal of Inava to the Chronicles of the Returns. Back in Stonemount, he had only been able to hear the songs known by townsfolk or passing minstrels, but now, as a lord, he could demand any of them on a whim. It had become his habit to request a reading from one of them after hearing a section out of The Way of Kings. Unfortunately, he wouldn't be able to sneak in any ballad reading this day.
Lady Sinkal marched onward through her recitation, reading about the rules by which a sovereign should decide whether or not to go to war.
"She's not married, you know," Arador whispered about 3/4 of the way through the reading.
Maren rolled his eyes.
"Why is it you insist on trying to marry me off?" he hissed. "You're 5 years older than me, and you haven't seen fit to woo a bride yet. In fact, everything I hear claims you enjoy keeping the women guessing."
"I'm horribly misrepresented," Arador said. "It's a conspiracy among the mothers. None of them want me as a son-in-law."
Maren shot his friend a suffering look. Arador was one of the most sought-after matches in Alethkar. It was commonly expected that he would be chosen as Parshan after his father died. Either way, he would inherit Kolinar, one of the most powerful cities in the kingdom. Any mother would be eager to choose him for her daughter if she thought he would agree to the match.
Arador nodded toward Sinkal. "Her father is Lord of Basinrock," he noted, "a sixth city."
"And?" Maren asked. That made her a 16th lady.
"And," Arador said meaningfully, "she has no brothers."
"No brothers?" Maren thought with surprise, turning to regard the woman again. She continued her reading despite the whispers. Apparently it was expected that the men would get distracted every once in a while. She looked up as she spoke, shooting him a glance and a smile, then looked back down at the book.
"That means her husband will inherit the city," Arador explained quietly.
"I'm not dense, Arador," Maren replied.
"Basinrock is only a sixth city," Arador continued, "but that's very respectable, all things considered. It's a tribute city to Kolinar right now, but its emerald mines are productive enough that my father has considered granting it full independence. If its lord were a relative, father could easily be persuaded to make the change. Her father is very eager to see that happen."
"Eager enough to marry his daughter to a former peasant?" Maren asked with a frown.
"Don't be so quick to judge them, Maren," Arador said. "Not every nobleman is like Maridas or the king. Some of us see a lorded citizen as the most honorable kind of nobleman. Listen to what Bajardin says. His entire social system is based around the idea of rewarding those who serve well. The best leaders are to be elevated, and those who deserve nobility will find it. In a way, your existence legitimizes all of us."
Maren sat back thoughtfully, remaining quiet until the end of the recitation. Once it was finished, Lady Sinkal modestly withdrew. It would be unseemly for her to tarry too long with men she had barely met. As she left, however, she mentioned that she would be visiting Kolinar for a period of 2 weeks, and that she would be pleased to return and read to them from the other sections.
"I think she likes you," Arador said after the door closed.
"That's because she couldn't smell me," Maren said with a frown. "Next time, warn me when you're going to do something like that."
Arador snorted. "Last time I did, you found an excuse to run away and hide. Pick up your sword. It's time for training."
The opal in Maren's shard blade had darkened steadily over the weeks. Maren examined the gemstone closely as he walked, peering into its graying depths. It had been about 2 months since the final Prelir battle, nearly 80 days. He was getting so close. Just a few more weeks, and the blade would be his completely. He would be able to dismiss it and recall it, and all shadows of its former owner would be gone. As it was, the only remnant of the dead man was a faint outline of the glyphs running up the length of the blade. Over the weeks, the weapon had lengthened by 1/2 foot, growing to Maren's needs. The gemstone-like indentations on the blade had melted away, instead being replaced by shifting waves that looked something like water. Maren wasn't certain why the design was appearing. He'd only seen the ocean once, when they had passed near its tip while marching to Prala.
yet he was told that the blade would know his soul better than he did, and that its ornamentations would reflect him. The blade had begun to curve slightly, losing its straightness. That, at least, he understood. The fighting style Vasher was teaching him relied heavily on broad swings and slashes, and had very little focus on thrusts. The weapon was growing to fit his training. The hilt had grown as well, perfect for the two-handed blows he often delivered, and the crossguard was curving delicately, the ends growing into points. "You know," Arador noted, "staring at it won't make it bond any faster." Marin lowered the weapon. "I'm just worried. The dueling competition is only a few days away. I guess I won't have the weapon bonded in time."
"You can still participate," Arador said. "You'll just have to fight with the sheath on so you don't accidentally hurt anyone."
"That will make it awkward to fight," Marin said. "Assuming I even get to participate."
"You haven't asked him yet?" Arador asked. Marin shook his head.
"I'm going to do it today."
"He's got to let you," Arador said confidently. "I mean, why is he training you if not to teach you how to duel? This is a perfect opportunity to test your skills."
Marin wasn't so certain. Vasher still forbade Marin from dueling with anyone besides himself and a couple of his fellow monks. Marin bid Arador farewell as they entered the monastery, making his way toward Vasher's customary corner of the courtyard. Vasher nodded to him as he approached.
"Today we spar again," he said simply, tossing Marin a practice sword.
Marin caught the sword and fell into his stance. A few moments later, they were trading blows on the sandy ground. Marin liked to think he was getting better. After all, Vasher had finally consented to begin teaching him how to spar, rather than just making him practice swings and stances. Of course, Marin had yet to even score a hit on the older man. He tried hard as they practiced, waiting for that one chance, that one opening, when he would finally show his teacher his improvement. It had yet to come. Marin held up a hand forestallingly as the latest exchange ended. Vasher waited patiently as Marin stretched his arms, then fell back into a dueling stance. The stance was the sign, and the elder monk advanced again, kicking up sand as he approached. Marin held his weapon forward, watching carefully for the first strike, parrying it as it came. According to Vasher, most fights were won on the turn of one or two blows. However, before those blows came, there was often testing, a few tentative exchanges meant to distract one's opponent, or perhaps judge his strength. The end came in a flash. Marin parried as trained, on the defensive, trying to block or dodge all of the strikes. As usual, he wasn't left with any opportunities to attack. Vasher struck so quickly, his attacks came so rapidly, that it was all Marin could do to keep himself from being hit. This time, he blocked most of them. One blow, however, slipped through, striking him on the side of the leg. Marin grunted in pain, losing his rhythm as Vasher pressed forward, bowling over him and knocking him to the ground. Marin sighed, resting back in the sand, staring up into the darkening sky. It was completely free of clouds. During spring and fall, the sky was often cloudy, even when no high storm was approaching. During the summer, however, even a hint of rainfall was too much to expect.
"You keep leaving your left side open," Vasher said. "You're not a spearman anymore. You don't have a shield to protect you."
"I trained with a spear and shield for 2 years, Marin replied. "I can't expect to overcome my reflexes in 2 months.
"Excuses are fine until they kill you," Vasher said. "Come on, we haven't been at it that long."
Marin sighed, sitting up. As he did so, he felt an unfamiliar lump in his pocket. He frowned, reaching down reflexively before remembering the glyph ward he and Renarin had discovered. He glanced up at Vasher, then hesitated. "It can't be evil," Marin told himself. "It's a glyph ward." However, he was still uncertain. "Use any advantage you have." Vasher's words from before returned to him. Marin reached in his pocket as he stood, quickly unwrapping the glyph ward. He brought out the ward with a hasty motion, slipping it around his neck and tucking it beneath his shirt. The air became perceptible around him, driven by a cool breeze coursing through the valley. He could see it, stronger up above, blowing over the wall and dropping in upon them.
"Stance," Vasher ordered.
Merrin did as commanded. What kind of advantage did he expect to receive from the glyph ward? Being able to see the wind wasn't exactly a strong martial benefit. Vasher approached, sword held before him in a familiar, careful grip. He was cautious, discerning, perfect. He gave no clue as to his thoughts. Except... Vasher took a sharp breath. Merrin saw it. Saw the air get sucked through Vasher's nose, then suddenly stop. The monk was holding his breath. Merrin struck even as Vasher raised his blade to attack. Merrin moved in quickly beneath the man's guard. Vasher's eyes flashed with surprise, but it was too late. Merrin's weapon struck Vasher on the side of the chest, causing a grunt of pain and throwing dust from the monk's clothing. The monk stumbled back, lowering his weapon.
"Ha!" Merrin said. "Finally!"
Vasher rubbed his side, eyes thinning.
"You're getting too accustomed to my style," he informed. "Fight the same man too long and even a novice will learn to anticipate his moves. Let's get a drink."
Merrin continued to smile, tempted to mention Vasher's own lecture on excuses. However, now was not the time to agitate the aging monk. As they approached the water barrel, Merrin carefully broached a new subject. "The dueling competition is in 4 days," he said.
"So?" Vasher asked.
Merrin shrugged.
"I thought I might participate." "Not if you want to keep learning from me, you won't," Vasher said.
Merrin groaned, dropping his ladle into the water.
"Why, Vasher? Don't you understand the opportunity I'll be passing up?"
"You already have a blade," Vasher said. "The competition means nothing to you."
"It means everything," Merrin said.
How could he explain?
"You're a monk, Vasher. You don't understand these things. I need to participate, show the others that I can be one of them. They still think of me as Lord Delinar's pet peasant. I need to prove myself."
"You're young," Vasher said, taking a drink. "There will be plenty of time for you to prove yourself. Afterward, there will be plenty of time to regret doing so."
Merrin sighed, leaning against the barrel with a frustrated glare.
"I understand more than you think, Merrin," Vasher said. "I haven't always been a monk."
Merrin nodded disconsolately. Eventually, he looked up, studying the grizzled monk.
"Vasher, I've spoken to the others. You've never taken a student, not even a peasant. None of the monks you spar with have taken students either. What made you decide to train me?"
Vasher replaced the ladle, then fished out the one Merrin had dropped.
"I know something of what it is like to be a reject," he said. "I understand what it is to leave one life and begin another."
Merrin frowned at the cryptic answer. Vasher just turned back toward their practice swords.
"No duels, Merrin," he repeated. "Come on, you've training to do."